Good morning to you. If you were here about 3 years ago, then you've heard the story I'm about to share with you. I've told this little story over the last almost 21 years. Four or five times, I think. All right, I'm cleaning up my nest up here. So, when I pastored the little church in, and I'm going to tell it again, just simply because I like the story. I've got people texting me things here. I've never had that before. Right before I get up here, that somebody's texting me stuff that I see on. You're exactly correct. You know who you are. Eli's reminding me that we didn't tell people before the offering that we were taking up to help Denton Baptist Disaster Relief. We said we were going to do that this week. Now I'm in this quandary because I don't know what to do. But I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do it next week. What do you think about that? Can we do another offering? Oh, we always take up money in a bad church. But I think what I'll do is if you designated something, well, then we'll hold on to that and give it if you marked it. And since we didn't say that's what we're going to do, we'll do it next week and I'll tell you before the offering. And if that's the wrong thing to do, well, then, you know, just get over it. All right. Now then, back to my story. Thank you, Eli, for helping me. When I pastored a little church before I came here down to East Texas, I was the only staff member, and so after Sunday night, I was the one that turned out the lights and locked the doors. And that particular building was, there was a sanctuary, and there were long hallways on both sides of it. And I was going to exit out that hallway to go home. But so I would start at the end of the hallway down there on Sunday night, and I would start making sure all the doors were locked and the lights were turned off. And in the latter years that I was there, I had a little toddler that wanted to go with me. I won't tell you which one of my children this was, but when she knew I was going to be doing this, she wanted to walk with me. And so she and I would walk down to the end of the building, and we would start turning off lights. All the lights would be on. We'd turn off a light. There was still enough light that it wasn't scary, and we'd lock doors, and we'd come. But when we'd get to the sanctuary, and we'd come in the door from that hallway, the lights for the sanctuary were over here by the piano, which meant that when we turned those off, now we're in a big dark room. And a dark enough, big enough dark room that little toddlers would be scared of that. And so when we first started doing this, she wanted to flip the lights out because she could reach those lights easy. And so she would hit those switches. Well, then everything would go pitch dark. Whatever that means. That's really dark, I think, pitch dark. And so then she would cry out and she'd go, "Daddy," and she'd be scared. And I would be standing over close to her and I would say, "Sweetheart, just come to the sound of my voice. My hand is held out to you." And she would, "Oh, I can't." You know, at first she's just panicking. Well, then she would come and grab my hand. And then I would lead her through across and not hitting any pews or Lord's Supper table. And we'd go out and there would be light in the hallway over there. As we did this over a period of time, her fears became a little bit less. She would say, "Daddy," at first. She'd be a little apprehensive. And I would say, "Sweetheart, you know what to do." And she would say, "Yeah, just keep talking and I'll come to you." And sometimes I would be a little bit further away, but she would just come to the sound of my voice and she would reach up and she knew my hand was there and she would grab my hand. And early on when she would grab my hand, she would be squeezing the life out of it. But as we did this over time, she would touch my hand, but it wouldn't be squeezing it. You know why? Because she was beginning to be a little more comfortable with this. In fact, as we did this more and more, it even became a bit of a game for her. And as we're coming to the sanctuary, she said, "Now, Daddy, you know what we're going to do?" And I say, "I know. You're going to make the room go dark." And she said, "Yeah, but you're just going to talk to me and I'm going to come to you." She knew ahead of time how this was going to work. It was going to be scary, but not really, because I would talk to her and then she would come to the sound of my voice and my hand would be there and she'd grab it, but she really didn't need to squeeze. She just wanted to stay in contact with me because she knew I would lead her to the light. You all know where I'm going with this, don't you? You can see the analogy of that. I love the little story. I know you heard it 3 years ago. I just like to tell it because I think it's a great picture of faith. Because sometimes we find ourselves standing in the big dark room. We're not exactly sure how to get to the light. But God's voice is always there calling to us. And if we'll listen for it, we go to Him and He will take us by the hand and He will lead us out of the big dark room. And if we do that enough, we even begin to anticipate it. And we have less and less fear about the big dark room. Would you open your Bibles to Genesis 22 this morning? Kennedy, I'll be done in just a bit. It'll be all right, sweetheart. Faith is not just having information in our head. Steve referred to that earlier. It's being convicted in our heart that what we say we know is actually true, true so much so that we can depend on it, we can trust it. And the only way that you'll ever know that what you think is true really is true is when you actually depend on it. When you find yourself in a big dark room, when you find yourself in a situation where that's your only hope and that's your only way out. If we take the Lord by the hand and yield to His guidance, He will move us out of the big dark room and move us to where He wants us to be. This morning in Genesis 22, it's a story about when knowledge and conviction finally get together and give birth to action. And I just, it's one of my favorite stories of the Old Testament. And I just want to remind you of it this morning in the hopes that our faith will move us and motivate us, captivate us to give God our very best in every area of our life. Genesis 22, from the beginning, God had expectations for Abraham. And that expectation was complete obedience. In Genesis 12, God commanded Abram. He said, "Go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house to the land that I will show you." There's a clear expectation in there. The expectation of God is you're going to obey my voice and you're going to go from here to where I show you. The explanations are not real full in that statement. The explanations, you know, it's not like he gives him a why here in a minute. But he doesn't know where the land is that God's going to show him. Now, God gives him a bit of the why. He says, "I'm going to make you into a great nation." And God says, "I will bless you." He's telling Abram, "I will bless you and I will make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. And I will curse those who curse you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." Now, that's a huge promise. And all the weight of it is on what God is going to do. God promises, "This is what I'm going to do, but my expectations are you're going to completely obey me." And in order for God's promise to be fulfilled, that's what was going to have to happen. Abram was going to have to yield, and he was going to have to obey. We all understand that. And as you remember the story of Abraham, he stumbled and fell. He was scared of the big dark room. He didn't understand. He couldn't see things. And in an attempt to get hold of God's hand, there were so many times he would stumble and fall and scrape his knee. But 25 years finally passed. And all of a sudden he had a son the first of those many, 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 many descendants that he was going to have. And when we get to Genesis 22, all of that now has happened, and that son has now become a young boy. And what we're going to see is that the text actually says that God then tested Abraham, as if he hadn't had enough tests for 25 years. God then tests Abraham. I want you to see this and remind yourself of it. In Genesis 22, it says, "Now it came about after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, Here I am. And he said, Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you." It came about after these things. Well, what are those things? Well, it's after 25 years of Abram waiting on God to fulfill his promise to make him into a great nation. It's after 25 years of God reminding Abraham, "Don't you worry, I'll keep my promise." It's after 25 years of occasionally living by fear and stumbling around because of that fear rather than living by faith. And it's after 25 years of gradually learning through those stumbles and falls that God was a God that you could take seriously and he was trustworthy. He was fair, he was just. And sometimes he worked in mysterious ways, but by this time, after 25 years, Abraham had finally learned he will work. And it was after those things, after 25 years of that learning process, that God then tested Abraham. Hebrew word is nasah. It means to test or to prove by experience. I like the word, the English translation, tested. Some of you may actually have that God tempted Abraham. In the New Testament, it's the same word and sometimes translated all those ways. But I like the word tested better than tempt, and here's the reason why. Because I think in our culture, we think of temptation as an opportunity to do the wrong thing. Not how God sees it. And so I like the word test because that's an opportunity to show what you know. It's an opportunity to do the right thing. The devil likes us to be tempted so that we have an opportunity to do the wrong thing. You know why? So that we'll focus on our weaknesses. God allows situations in our life in order to test us so that we have the opportunity to do the right thing, so that we then see the power of God's goodness. Are you with me? What I just shared with you there is worth the ticket or the price of admission. Are you with me? Devil wants to tempt you because he wants to give you an opportunity to do the wrong thing. God allows those situations into our life in order to give you the opportunity to do the faithful thing. The devil is trying to get you to see your weakness. God wants you to see his power and goodness. Okay. God was not testing Abraham to try to learn something about Abraham that God did not already know. God was testing Abraham for Abraham's benefit. In the same way, he will allow testing to come to you. Not so that God can figure something out about you, but that you can see your faith at work. It was a test to prove to himself that after these things, after those 25 years of stumbling, bumbling around in the dark, that he'd finally learned to take God by the hand and let him lead him where he wanted to go. "Take now your son," he says, "your only son, whom you love, Isaac." Now, I got to admit, sometimes I read that and I wonder, why is he so specific about his son? He only had one son of the promise. "Take now your son, your only son, the one whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah. Offer him as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will show you." Again, the expectation is very clear. He's got to offer up the thing that is most precious to him. That's clear. his son, the one he loves, Isaac. He is to offer him up as a sacrifice. The expectation is clear. The explanation's not all that clear. There is no why here. God doesn't say, here's why you're going to do this. There's no direction about exactly where you're going to go. It's to the mountain that I'll show you. Why would God, who had blessed Abram all these years, now ask him to give up the one child he's been waiting 25 years for? Why would God, who intended to make Abraham the father of a great nation, want to kill the son of the promise? There's no explanation. But again, the expectation is quite clear. God is telling Abram, you give me that which is you absolutely cherish the most. Imagine that. You yield to me that which you would not yield to anyone else. Surrender over to me that which you would fight anyone if they tried to take it from you. Give me your best. That's the expectation. Abraham at this point knew a lot about God, but now he's being given an opportunity to prove that what he knows is dependable and trustworthy. Verse 3. Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son, and he split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. I know I've been doing this for a long time, but every time I read that, the first thing that comes to my mind is wow. And maybe a little bit of beating myself up at times, because I don't know about you, but I like to know why I'm doing stuff. Abraham doesn't know why. He doesn't know all the details about how all this is going to work out. But what he does know, he's acting on. All he's got right now is a direct word from God about what he ought to be doing. And he is acting on that, even though he may not feel like it, even though he can't explain everything about it. He's willing to give God his very best. So he gets up the next morning with the intent on doing that very thing. He saddles up the donkey, splits some wood, because there's going to be a burnt offering today. On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. And Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go yonder, and we will worship and return to you. And again, I read that and I just go, wow, wow. I and the lad go yonder. Okay, got that. I and the lad will worship. Okay, got that. I and the lad will return to you. Wow. Do you remember in past times when... For instance, story of the Exodus, Exodus 14. People have left Egypt. They find themselves trapped between the Red Sea and the Egyptian army. They're in a dark, big dark room. The people are standing in the corner crying. And Moses says this in Exodus 14, 13. Do not fear. Stand by and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you now see, you will never see them again forever. Wow. You know, that's faith talking, isn't it? Do you hear how strong faith sounds? The confidence of faith. It's not standing in the corner of the big dark room. It's welcoming the dark room because I'm about to see God do something. Abraham says, I and the lad will go yonder and we will worship and we will return. And that's not a baseless faith. That's not just name it and claim it. This is what I want to end up happening, so I'm just going to claim it and God's obligated somehow to do it. Abraham is standing on a very sure foundation of God's word. Flip back in chapter 21. Look in verse 12. So this is happening before the test. Before the test, look in chapter 21, verse 12. God said to Abraham, do not be distressed because of the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her. For through Isaac, your descendants shall be named. Abraham had a clear word from God, through this boy, my descendants are going to come. Yeah, but now he's telling you to sacrifice it. And I think Abraham's going, I know I can't wait to see how this is going to turn out. I'm in the big dark room, but you know what? I know where God is, and I'm going to take him by the hand. I'm just going to obey what he says. And somehow, God's going to work this thing out. And instead of seeing it as an opportunity to go, oh, no, I'm so overwhelmed by the big dark room. Abraham, I think, is saying, I don't know how, but stand by and watch. And Abraham, verse 6, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife, and so the two of them walked on together. And Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, my father. He said, here I am, my son. He said, look here. I'm sorry, behold. The fire and the wood. But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? And Abraham stood in the corner of the big dark room and said, I don't know. No, he didn't. God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. In other words, in English, that means, I don't know. I don't know. All I know is God's going to take care of it somehow. I lost my place. God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Can I just tell you something? And I love doing this because this is something that you already know. God didn't want the blood of Isaac. There's a news flash. God didn't want the blood of Isaac. What did he want? He wanted the heart of Abraham. You are worried about a lot of stuff that you don't think you can give up. God is wanting your very best. And guess what? He really doesn't want that. You know what he wants? He just wants you to prove to yourself that you're willing to give God your very best. And so he tests you at times. Not because he doesn't know how it's all going to turn out. He wants you to see that either you're there or you're not there yet. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar at the top of the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here I am. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, you respect God, you honor God, since you have not withheld the most cherished thing in your life. You have not withheld that thing which you would have fought anybody else if they'd tried to take it from you. You've not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him, a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering on the place of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said this day, in the mount of the Lord it will be provided. Can you just imagine? I mean, Abraham is so impressive in this passage. You know, if you've been reading his story from Genesis 12 up to this point, you've seen him stumbling and bumbling out of the corner of the big dark room, and now he's taking the Lord by the hand, and he's smiling about the darkness, you know? It's what faith does. What an impact, though, that this had on Abraham. Think about it. Put yourself in his sandals for a minute, and you trusted him, and then God worked in this way. You would just be, "Oh my goodness, let me tell you about how big my God is." What an impact. Wouldn't you agree with me? What an impact that'd have on Abraham. Are you with me? Let me tell you this. What an impact it'd have on Isaac. Isaac was laying there all bound up, seeing his daddy stand over him with a knife about to run him through and make him the sacrificial lamb. And then all of a sudden, God provided, and all of a sudden Isaac knew, his daddy knew, "Son, you just trust in God, and he'll provide. Son, you just need to understand, you offer God the most cherished stuff in your life. You offer him that which you would fight anybody if they tried to take it. You offer God your best, and God will always give you back more than you offer." What an impact that would have on Isaac. What an impact it would have on our children, our co-workers, our school peers. What an impact it would have. If they saw us, would you agree with me? If they just saw us offering God, not what we've got left over, not what we feel like we can afford, but we just offer God our very best, the very thing that we would fight anybody if they tried to take it from us. We freely give that up for the joy of giving it up to him. We take him by the hand and follow him wherever he'd take us. You know how that would encourage our own faith, but it would have an impact on those who saw that. Wouldn't you agree? There's a growing number of people in this country who claim to be people of faith. In fact, everybody I know, pretty much. Some observe the Sabbath faithfully, some don't. Some obey the commands of God regarding the church, some don't. A few demonstrate a biblical understanding of what faith is. Some don't. And I believe that God gives us all opportunities to prove to ourselves that we are indeed people of faith. And I don't think he gets mad when we have proven to ourselves that we're not quite there yet. But those struggles and those opportunities and those moments that you find yourself standing in the corner of the big dark room, those are opportunities for you to listen to the voice of God and take him by the hand and prove to yourself that you'll follow him wherever he leads you. Let's bow for a word of prayer. Father, we praise you and thank you for the big dark rooms in our life.